Is this on?
Yes, my lord.
Good. Hello, this is God speaking. Can we dial that down?
Yes, my lord.
Thanks. Welcome, new arrival, to the Eternity Ward. Please take a number and make your way down to the left or the right to the waiting room. All you need is the refreshments I made just for you. I would tell you to steer clear of the apples, they're forbidden, and the two snakes. I mean, fools, sorry, that are chewing the fat in the corner, but you probably wouldn't listen anyway. So good luck, I bless you, and on your way.
Welcome to the Eternity Ward, where we flick through old copies of Reader's Digest and chat with our buddies while we wait for an appointment with God. I'm Nick.
I'm Chris. We're both dropping the surnames now.
We're like Madonna now, Chris. We're that famous.
Yeah, strike a pose.
Do you want to sing us a song?
No.
It's really unfortunate for singers that have like a real boring first name, like John Farnham. Like, you can't drop your surname because John. Which one?
You make up a stage name. That's what so many have done.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We should do that then, Chris. Nick and Chris are too boring.
All right, what's your stage name?
Party Pants. Welcome to the Eternity Ward, where we flick through old copies of Reader's Digest and chat with our buddies while we wait for an appointment with God. I'm Party Pants.
I'm Straight Slacks. I don't know. I don't know. I was trying to think of something complimentary and, you know, boring, like your party. I'm just in a flannelette onesie. Yeah.
I would love to have one of those onesies. I've never had one, but the thing that freaks me out is, how do you go to the toilet?
Don't they have any little openings or anything?
I don't know. Maybe they do. Listeners, if you have a onesie, how do you go to the toilet? Answering all the important questions this week. I do have a question for you.
Oh, here we go. Straight off the bat.
Chris, you're a dog lover.
Yeah.
You've got a dog, Pilot,
yeah.
Who's a regular contributor to these episodes. Have you ever taught Pilot any tricks?
Yeah, heaps.
What can Pilot do?
Shake hands, high five, roll over, play dead, jump, spin, dance, wait, eat. Wee, poo. Oh, they're not really tricks, are they?
Wow, that's incredible. If you could teach her not to do those ones.
Yeah, she knows a bunch of them. There's probably some more I forgot.
Well, have you ever taught her to do the Hitler salute?
Oh, I know where this is going. I know this story. No, but she could do a high five. You know, like I could just remove my hand there for the high five and there you go.
Yeah, perfect.
There's your Hitler salute. Yeah.
There it is. All right. If you could upload that to YouTube at some point,
thank you.
I'll overdub the audio for you.
No, that's fine. I don't need to be world famous. Really,
you don't want to go to prison.
No.
So what is this story, Chris?
The Nazi pug story. So there's a little pug dog was owned by this guy's girlfriend. He's a bit of a YouTube content creator. You know, people have their YouTube channel. So he's a bit of a wannabe comedian, and he said that his girlfriend was always talking up how beautiful and gorgeous the dog was. It could never do any wrong. And so he thought as a joke that he'd try and think of the most offensive thing that he could get the dog doing to show her.
The most uncute thing.
Yeah, train the dog to respond to Sieg Heil and other statements like gas the Jews and, you know, to raise its paw. And yeah, so he put that on YouTube. This is what shocked me when I read it. It was like 2 years ago he did that. It's been up there for ages. Anyway, just recently, there'd been some complaints about it, and he got arrested over it and taken to court and charged as guilty. Do you know what under what sort of charge?
Convicted of a hate crime, I believe.
Okay. So there's a lot of people who thought that was going too far. Yeah, calling that a hate crime and convicting him of essentially making a joke. A joke that I would consider in very poor taste. Because I think if you're, I don't know, I'm trying to imagine you're a Holocaust survivor. Somehow you come across a YouTube clip of a dog, you know, someone saying, guess the Jews, and the little pug dog's raising its paw. I don't know. I find that pretty insulting and offensive. Joke in poor taste. Hate crime. I don't know how you get there, though. I mean, I know we have laws, like this is in the UK, it was in Scotland, and we have laws around that sort of stuff. But for me, it's like you have to be inciting violence. And that's been there for 2 years. I don't know of any violence that's come from this pug, you know, this pug video. How do you claim that it's a hate crime? I think it's in poor taste, but why can't we just denounce it as being a joke in really poor taste? So this story took your interest because I guess you care a lot about free speech. So this is this why you came across this story and got interested in this story?
Yeah, a couple of different reasons. Yeah, free speech obviously is something that I think is critical in our society. The way I came across it is Ricky Gervais retweeted it, and I follow him on Twitter. I read the headline, and it was something like, you know, man charged over YouTube joke. And I was like, that can't be true. So then I read it and went, oh, what? It seems to be true. And so then I went and watched the video and went, oh, God, he was just making a joke. And what? He's actually been found guilty of a hate crime. And I couldn't believe that it was happening. And it shocks me that this is going on.
Surely he'll be able to appeal that, right?
I reckon he'll have plenty of backers who will give him money to continue the court case.
From what I could see, there's no link between him and, you know, it's not like he is some anti-Semite, you know, sort of person always putting up stuff that's anti-Semitic or anything like that.
He has piercings, Chris.
Yeah, my wife has piercings.
He's white, Chris.
Yeah, I'm and white.
He's a male, Chris.
But that doesn't mean that he's anti-Semitic.
Must be racist.
Mind you, pretty shitty joke.
No way, get over it.
I mean, like, would you say that there are certain people that would find that offensive?
Yeah, of course.
The judge said that free speech comes with responsibility. I agree with that.
Yep, I agree.
And so for me, I'm like, why needlessly do something offensive? Like, there are times when you need to say something offensive, and that's why we want free speech. And so that was, I think, pretty needlessly offensive. But I don't, you know, was he intending on offending anyone? Probably not.
Of course not. Well, other than his girlfriend.
Yeah, but you know, the thing that worries me is, well, I'm not that worried, really. I'm like, is this really going to be some sort of precedent now? Is this what's going to happen? This is a precedent for a hate crime? Are people going to use this?
That's what I'm worried about.
Sure. Really?
Yeah, well, if someone had have told you 3 weeks ago that someone's going to be convicted of a hate crime for posting a joke on YouTube, you would have gone, no, that's stupid.
Yeah.
And that's what I did when I read the headline. I'm like, that's stupid. It can't be true. And then, well, it is true. People have actually think this is a hate crime. And just, well, if that's the path that people are going down, I think that's really scary and dangerous.
Is it just one judge, one court, or is this, you know, more representative of something else?
I think that's why I bring it up, because I think it is representative of something else.
Right. You know, the video's up there for 2 years and it's only just got complaints. It doesn't seem like there's been widespread outrage about this. Like, do you have any knowledge of, like, what are people saying about this? Is there a large faction of people that are going, hell yeah, put him away?
I haven't done surveys about it, Chris, so I wouldn't know the percentages. I would imagine most people would be like you, Chris, and say, well, you know, it's needlessly offensive, but it shouldn't be a crime. I think that would be most people's response. But there is a scary minority of people who do think that this is a crime. And people call them social justice warriors, people who are just hell-bent on pretending that they're saving the world.
I don't mind being called a social justice warrior.
Oh, don't you? Okay, good, good. I'll call you that then. But you're not in this case.
For me, free speech is the thing I would want to champion in that situation. But yeah, still free speech still comes with responsibility, and he's been a bit irresponsible. But to warrant...
He hasn't been irresponsible.
Well, yeah.
Let's get on this then.
Right.
So you think there are some issues that people shouldn't go into because they're too offensive?
Issues.
Well, like the Holocaust, like saying gas the Jews.
Well, you can use the term gas the Jews in a conversation, but as a callous race-related done in a mocking way.
But was he doing it in a mocking way?
I can see how someone, a Holocaust survivor maybe, seeing a pug raise its paw to a statement of gas the Jews, how you can make that leap. Did he intend that? I doubt it. I really do. I think he was just trying to be funny, that's all.
Yeah. Part of my problem with this idea of offence,
yeah,
that, you know, someone could take offence to it, and so therefore you need to be super careful about what you say.
Mm.
There's just no way we can have a conversation about anything that's important if we're going to be totally freaked out about offending people. Like, we can't have a conversation about abortion. We can't have a conversation about homosexuality. We can't have a conversation about any of these touchy subjects, especially if they're personal in nature, if someone's going to stand up every 10 seconds and say, you're offending me, you're offending me. And this wasn't even a serious conversation. It was a joke.
I think you can have conversations around those things and without being needlessly offensive, you know, you just go into that conversation being as respectful as you can. You know, you might have to be pretty strong on something.
Yeah, so I think humour is a reason for going into difficult subjects.
Oh, comedians do it all the time. Yeah.
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 And so I don't think it's legitimate for anyone to say that he's being needlessly offensive, because I don't think he's being needlessly offensive. He's just making a joke.
Yeah, fair enough.
And yeah, will it offend some people? Yeah, it probably will. But then, like, I'm sure I've offended people by saying stuff on this podcast, but it's not my intention. It's not like I'm trying to do that. It's just that's what happens when you have conversations in public.
Fair enough. Not hard to be civil, though. Though humour will push those boundaries and has to have a license too. But it's a bit nuts to convict someone of that. I mean, heck, YouTube could have just removed the video if it contravened something of their policies and values, and then it's done. But it seems it didn't bother them that much anyway. But offence has to be allowed under the law, and we can still be free to respond to it. We can berate a poor joke, but unless it is gross racial discrimination or inciting hatred or violence. Seriously, is he going to go to jail for this? I mean, getting done for a hate crime, that's a serious crime, right?
Not anymore. Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, you're weakening these laws. Like, what does that mean now? You've lumped him in with, like, Nazis. He's not a Nazi.
Yeah, crazy.
Crazy. You asked before, like, do I think this is part of a larger movement, I suppose, a larger scary uprising? Well, one of the things that came to mind when I heard about it was the story of James Damore. Have you heard of that story?
This is the guy who made some sort of statement about the difference between men and women in, was it in Google or something, some organization that he was in?
Yeah, yeah. So he was an engineer that worked for Google, and Google, like pretty much all tech companies, is fairly progressive. And I don't say that as a pejorative. But
yeah.
I think being progressive is a good thing.
Mm.
But so as part of their workplace, they have these meetings semi-regularly. They're not mandatory or anything, but people can choose to go to them. And there they often have some sort of diversity focus or inclusivity sort of focus about transgender people or about whatever, homosexuality or any of that sort of stuff. And so James Damore went along to some of these things, had a few concerns about some of the things that they were bringing up, and wrote this massive long document. Because at the end of the sessions, they ask for feedback. And so he wrote this big, long memo outlining the stuff he disagreed with, saying that there are biological differences between men and women and they're not built the same. And for this, he was fired from Google for promoting harmful gender stereotypes by saying that men and women aren't identical and that the reasons that there aren't more women in tech is because of sexism and microaggressions and all these sort of things. You read the headline of that and you go, well, I mean, Google wouldn't fire him unless he did actually say something horrific. But then, like, you go and listen to interviews with the dude and hear him outline exactly what he was talking about. He's just a smart, normal bloke. And it's craziness. Like, he wasn't saying that women are worse than men or that they're not as intellectual as men. He was just saying that, like, anything that any decent biologist would say, that there are differences between men and women. And obviously, that's a generalization, that there's individual women who will be better than men at things that most men are good at. You know, Ronda Rousey would beat the shit out of me. It doesn't mean that, you know, just because one man is weak that all men are weak. Just because one woman is weak, all women are weak. But there are general things that you can say about each gender, and they're true. And he got fired for saying that.
So why did he feel the need to write his response? What was his agenda there? Like, what was he trying to prove?
So there were these diversity programs that would encourage, you know, like whenever he would speak, like they would ask for responses from the people attending them, and he would like say something in response to it, and they would come back to him and say, well, when you're responding in these diversity programs, we need you to start with the statement as a white male, so that you're aware of your own biases and stuff like that. Whenever he would talk about promoting a meritocracy, the idea that everyone should be judged on their merit as opposed to anything else, they would say that that's a microaggression. Saying that you're promoting a meritocracy is your sneaky way of just promoting men, which is just crazy, unless you do think men are better than women. There would be these internal reviews where employees submit work for peer reviews, and if a woman's work got no reviews, they'd say that the women are being ignored. If it got lots of reviews, they'd say that the women are being over-scrutinized. And so there's just all these sort of things going on at Google that he wanted to respond to, And it was very commonplace at Google. They have these communal notice boards where people can post questions and start discussions. And so that's where he started it. He put this memo up there for discussion saying, this is what I think's going on at Google, and this is why I don't think it's an accurate reflection of society or of how men and women are treated. Like, had scientific references for all of his arguments, and yeah, as part of that, got fired.
So he was rocking the boat a bit, as in, like, the organisation was saying, we're going to do things this way, and so he's rocking the boat by arguing with them, you know, which is fine. I don't know enough about the story to feel like I can really comment. I was watching another interview with Jordan Peterson and with, what's that? He does the podcast like I'm a six-year-old. Tom Ballard.
Yeah, that was really good, saying, you know, can you destroy me, Jordan Peterson?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
So, yeah, I watched that interview, and Tom's a comedian. He was having a bit of a laugh by bringing in a folder of the ABC's equity policy where he'd gone and put a hammer and sickle on the cover as if the ABC were commos. But, you know, within that, they were talking about the ABC has like an aim to have at least 20% women in that tech industry side of things, which is, I think, the sort of thing you're talking about when it comes to Damore. And that policy is there because likewise, they reckon there are issues. And so from my understanding within that realm, it is male dominated. And look, when you say getting the job on merit, I'm like going, well, women do get ignored. Women do get over-scrutinized. Microaggression behavior within that realm, you know, does exist. So you have to be open to the, you know, even if we did it on merit, like the percentage of women might even be higher because they're not necessarily starting from the same spot. And Google, the ABC, they identify that, try to do something about it. Maybe they go, this James guy's being unhelpful. Oh, look, I don't know. I don't know enough detail about the story. But yeah, I get your concern for the guy, and I'm concerned for the women too. I did see another story actually about a professor at an American college who had people and, you know, employer turn on him. They were having like a white free day on campus. Did you catch that one?
Brett Weinstein. Don't say Weinstein.
Right.
he does not want to be related to Harvey at the moment.
I watched a bit of that and heard his explanation and went, oh, America, what are you doing? it's just people. Yeah. People are getting really outraged and fired up.
Do you want to explain that story for people that don't know
it? I think maybe you should. You sound like you're more across it.
Oh, I love Brett Weinstein. He's excellent. So Brett Weinstein, he's about the most left-leaning person that you could talk about. Well, no, that's going too far because he's not a social justice warrior. But so, like, he voted for Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
He works at this progressive college in the US where it sounds like an awesome college. Well, before all this stuff anyway. Like, he talks about it as though it's so unstructured the way that it's set up that any lecturer can set up their course however they want. They don't even have to teach the subject that they're an expert in. If they feel passionate about, you know, music, they can just say, well, that's what I'm going to be teaching this year. And that's the thing, that their courses, if they want, they can choose that their courses go for a full year. So they can have those 25 students for the entire year studying that one particular subject.
So if it's that unstructured, it would be they're going to do a subject and then the students will come or they will leave if they don't find it helpful enough. Okay, so yeah, that's pretty cool.
Him and his wife were both lecturers there, and they would take students on trips to Ecuador and stuff like this, and they'd, you know, help underprivileged people do fundraising and stuff like that to be able to come on the trips. And yeah, it sounds like they're an awesome couple of people. Anyway, so it's Evergreen State University, I think it's called, in Oregon. So every year in this university, they would have, I can't remember what it was called, but they had a day where all the people of color would not turn up to university on that day as a way of showing how important they are in society.
Yeah. So you'd walk around, you go, something's missing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All these people who are such a huge part of our community aren't here. We need to value them more, that sort of thing.
Yep.
So a really beautiful idea. Like, I love that idea. That's a great idea. And he was really supportive of this day. It had been going on for 17 years or something like that at this point. But then this year, well, whenever it was, a year ago, whatever, they decided that they'd switch it around so that instead of saying black people aren't going to come, instead they're going to say, we're going to tell white people you can't come to campus on this day. And so Brett Weinstein at that point went, well, now you're crossing a line. Because instead of saying you guys can choose not to come, and that being a message of we miss these people, we wish they were here, and yep. we need to make sure they realise how important a part of our culture they are.
Mm.
Instead of that, it turned into an exclusion thing where white people were being told you are not welcome on this day.
Mm.
And so he just simply said, like, he wrote a document outlining his position to his seniors at the university and said, I'm still going to be coming to university that day. I think it's a horrific idea. And so he turned up, and the backlash to that was that, yeah, just people went crazy.
Yeah.
They started calling him a racist and started calling him a Nazi, and they were just...
It was frustrating. I saw a bit of footage from that. It was just like, he's trying to explain himself, but it was just being shouted down by the mob. You know, and this is part of what I wanted to talk about tonight.
Social
was,
justice warriors,
was,
Chris.
Was mobs. The mob can come from, you know, anywhere within society, essentially. It doesn't have to be the social justice warriors.
No. Ignore my silly comments, Chris.
No, I'll just fight them. All right, I'll ignore it. I don't know. I was like going, did he do something wrong? Did he not communicate his position well enough? And I was just going, no, just the mob got fired up and that's it. And that's one thing that I was sort of interested in, because we're talking about things that we've been seeing in the media recently. You know, we've had a big media circus here in Australia around cricket, for one thing.
I have noticed that.
Yeah. It's hard to miss, isn't it? Yeah. I just found it interesting reflecting on how I responded when the whole story came out in the beginning to where I'm at now. You know, I just found it really interesting. I remember seeing it, the story flash up, ball tampering, and I'm like, ugh. I don't know. For some reason, it sort of didn't surprise me, because I've just lost a lot of interest in cricket over the years because I don't like the Australian team very much, because of all of the sledging, because of the culture. But, you know, I just don't care much about cricket. So I was like, yeah, throw the book at them. Throw the book at them. And they got the book thrown at them. They sure as heck did, for something that's pretty small. And then they've come back to their nation, which they've been serving their nation by playing sport in another country. You know, they've been playing for their nation. They come back to their nation and they're just hated. And, yeah, then they do their apologies. And I'm like going, oh, yeah, maybe I was a bit harsh to just say, just throw the book at them.
So you were getting outraged.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not online, you know, sending death threats to anyone, or even talking amongst my peers saying, bloody hell, you know, they should be whipped and, you know, I'm not, you know, it was just all an internal response, and I just kept it to myself how I felt about it all. And, but yeah, like my wife had been talking to me about, she read a book by a guy called John Ronson called So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And she was telling me some of the stories from that book. So I'm thinking about these guys that have been publicly shamed and just wondering how are we meant to respond to these sorts of things, and the mob mentality that comes out of all of it. It's just social media, right? We've got instant access to information all around the world all the time at our fingertips, and there's this news cycle. And like a lot of the news stories that we've been talking about, Nick, like we did the Black Lives Matter stuff, you know, news stories go out straight away and then they really shape an event and they shape how people respond to the event. And they're just a fraction of the story sometimes, you know. So I don't know where I'm going with this other than I've just been thinking about we all make mistakes. People make mistakes. They do stupid stuff.
Yeah. I found the reaction to the cricket stuff just silly. Like, sport is silly. Like, I love sport.
Yeah.
Like, don't think that I'm one of these intellectuals who just wants to crap on sport. I love watching sport. But sport is silly. It's not important. And these guys did something really stupid because they got the idea that sport meant more than it did. Well, you know, who cares? They scratched a ball. Get over it.
But the sport...
Why are they crying at the press conference? That's weird.
Because for Australians, sport does mean something. I don't think you can say it's silly.
Did that offend you, Chris?
Yeah, I'm. How dare you? Sport is religion in this country.
Take me to Scotland and sue me.
But you say, you know, they took it too seriously, you know, and in one sense, they didn't take it seriously enough. They're role models. They're representing their nation. I don't know why you'd want to cheat at sport. You don't.
What? What?
Why would you want to cheat? How do you feel?
You're kidding.
Okay, when you're playing football, you'll
grab the guy's arm where the ref can't see.
Yeah. So that's all cheating, essentially, but it's sort of within the game, within the spirit of the game, in a sense.
Yeah, right.
If you can get away
Chris's guide to cheating.
I always admired the cricketers who, you know, if they nicked the ball, they'd walk.
Gilchrist, go away.
It's a gentleman's game.
Oh, that's such rubbish, Chris. That's just media PR. It's a sport. It's stupid. It doesn't matter.
Well, it mattered to a lot of Australians.
You play it, you have fun. Yeah. If that's the most important thing in your life.
Oh, no. It's not the most important thing, but I think sport can be representative of culture in general.
Yeah, but the people that are getting outraged over it, you're kind of pathetic. The only reason Steve Smith and Cam Bancroft are crying is because people have been giving them shit. Like, if everyone was just going, that was a bit stupid, wasn't it? They wouldn't be crying. They'd just go, that was a bit dumb.
Is giving them that much shit, is that something toxic about our culture at the moment? That's my question, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah, it says that your life is meaningless. And that you're wasting your time sending hurtful messages to people you don't know.
Yeah, and this outrage, this cycle of outrage. Like, in this instance, I get that, well, for me, it does have meaning. Cricket, sport, you know, they're cultural, they're linked to things that matter. It's just a game, yeah, but how we play the game matters. Like, everything we do does, you know. But the level of outrage and the cycle of it, I mean, there are things that we do need to be and should be outraged about.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
But
just don't join a tribe.
SJW.
Yeah.
I'm not really a social justice warrior. I wish I was, I guess.
Depends what you mean by the term.
Yeah, it does, but I'm not.
Everyone should be fighting for social justice.
Yeah, essentially.
That should be beyond argument.
Yeah, but an SJW, I'm not. I'm not wearing some cultural uniform, breaking into unethical mining companies or whatever. I'm no warrior. Just an occasional voice of dissent.
You know what was really stupid about the whole cricket thing?
What?
If you were going to bring something onto the field of play to rough up the ball, you'd make it white, wouldn't you? You'd make a bright fluoro yellow.
Yeah, I guess that's the only colour that the sandpaper came in. Yeah. I was thinking the same thing.
I've got white paper from Bunnings. Also, how did they ever think they would get away with it? They know how many cameras on the ground. It's just dumb. Whoever came up with the idea, it seems to me like people are trying to pin it all on Dave Warner and that it was his idea and they convinced the other two. I don't know. I wouldn't have a clue. But whoever's idea it was, you're a real idiot.
No, I'm just scared about, I guess worried about, you know, you shouldn't judge other people. And I'm like going, well, we do that all the time. We judge other people when we walk past them in the street. You know, is this a safe person to walk past? Should I cross the road? We just judge all the time and we need that. We need to have judgmental capability to keep us safe and to surround ourselves with good people. And we need all of that. Heck, we hire people who are judges. You know, are we telling them they shouldn't judge? Some people have this idea that we shouldn't be judging. And I'm like going, doesn't it say judge not lest ye be judged? So in that sense, it's like, just know when you're judging that that can come back on you. And so if we're creating this culture of outrage and judging others and publicly shaming them and punishing them and they're losing jobs and crying in front of the whole nation, and you know, the mental health of some of these people is a worry in situations like that. That could be me. Like I said, I made a massive mistake the other day.
What'd you do?
What did I do? Oh, you were ready to hang me for it.
Merritt?
No. It was to do with that. We have a fantasy football podcast and we were talking about it. And so your team is called the Rainbow Butt Monkeys. And you often send me gifts with pictures of monkeys doing all sorts of things in it, right? And in this case, you didn't send me a picture of a gif with monkeys in it. There was a picture of three African men. And they were laughing. They were laughing at me because of my bad decisions. You were just sledging me in a fun way and it was all good. But then I was talking about it later on and I said, oh, you know, referencing to it, you know, that gif you sent me of the monkeys laughing. And you're like, Chris, how dare you? You know, and I'm like,
you racist.
I was horrified.
Yeah.
Horrified. And it's, you know, like, did that come from some little racist bone in my body somewhere, or did that?
That's right, Chris.
Or did that come from the fact that you send me monkey gifts all the time? Or is it a comment? You know, I don't know. I don't know where that came from. But
you serious?
What?
You seriously think there might be some hidden racism in you somewhere?
Well, obviously, just in the sense that whatever culture you grow up within and whatever you're surrounded by, enough of it seeps in. Like, heck, there's been so many references to, you know, black people calling them monkeys, like Adam Goods, right? Collingwood president Eddie Maguire called him a monkey on the radio when he got publicly shamed for all of that, which he pretty much deserved. But I know we're talking about public shaming, but even the whole Adam Goods story, that's another story of public outrage. I mean, the guy did a dance on the field and he was booed and vilified for it for weeks. And so I wrote blogs in defense of the great man because I just found the response to him just sickening. So I guess there's my proof to say that I'm not racist. You know, I'm not racist, but...
That's what the racist people always say, Chris.
I know, that's why I was saying it. I don't think I'm racist. But is there, from growing up within a predominantly white culture where there is racism, you have to say there is racism in Australia, then is some of that going to seep in and is some of that going to slip out every now and then?
So there's homosexuality in Australia.
Yeah.
Does that seep into you sometimes, Chris?
No, that's an orientation that's pretty set. I don't think that's something.
Is it?
Yeah, that's set. Whereas racism is not something that you're born with. It's an attitude. It's something that you learn.
I think we probably are born with racism. I think it's something we learn ourselves out of. Like, it's a evolutionary thing. Like, it made sense for us to be racist because you'd have to be afraid of, you know, the other tribe that was over the hill that were always coming over and stealing your stuff. So tribalism and racism, all that stuff makes sense evolutionarily. That doesn't make it a good thing. No, obviously, yeah. It's not. But I think it is a biological sort of thing that has been carried on through our genes and that...
I like the idea of overcoming our genes and being progressive, you know, in that sense and outgrowing some of that stuff. I think there's a lot that we're still going to outgrow.
But you're not racist, Chris. That's silly.
I'm not. But this is my point, is that I made a comment which could be construed as racist.
Yeah. If we had have left that in the podcast,
yeah,
you could have been hauled before the courts, Chris.
A slip of the tongue.
I could still do it. I've still got it on my computer.
Yeah.
Just remember that.
Blackmail now.
It's public, so.
Well, now I've got a record of you blackmailing me. do we need some sort of ethical boundary around our public outrage? Because it actually used to happen in the past. There used to be public shaming sort of thing, used to be a way of dealing with issues in certain societies. Public shaming was the thing that they would use until there were a lot of calls for within that society for more compassionate responses. And so that got sort of phased out. But now, with our interconnected technological social media world, you know, that's becoming something that's really on the rise again. You know, and it has its uses, being able to publicly hold people to account. So one of the things that I found interesting that I saw, so I've been watching a lot of what's been happening in America with the kids in America, the Parkland mass shooting survivors and their movement, which is still maintaining momentum. I've been really encouraged by that. One of the things that I found interesting, and I sort of had a bit of a giggle at, which I don't know, maybe I shouldn't, but there was David Hogg. He's one of the kids, and there's Laura Ingraham. She's a Fox News presenter of a program, and she tweeted out something about him being a provocateur, a guns rights activist sort of guy, and the fact that he hadn't been accepted into a bunch of colleges with just his 4.2 grade average, which I'm like going, why would you do that to a young person, publicly attack them for, and 4.2 is apparently pretty good. And so he responded with, does anyone want to tweet all of her advertisers and see if they're happy to have her saying these sorts of things about someone like me? And most of her advertisers ended up pulling from the show and she had to issue a public apology. So this is public conscience being utilized in a way to hold, you know, people accountable to good behavior, So a lot of people say it's not good behavior, and a lot of the companies agreed. What do you think of that whole story?
Unlike you, I haven't seen much of the Kids in America stuff coming up anymore. I guess you pay attention to different news sites than I do.
Well, it's also part of the echo chamber, really, isn't it?
That's right.
This whole social media thing creates is that, you know, you start following stuff like that and you just get more of it coming at you and showing up in your feed. And
Yeah. It seems to me to be like a double case of that public mudslinging thing. Like, she starts it by saying, like, I thought her tweet was pretty reasonable until she said the word whines. You know, so she said David Hogg rejected by four colleges to which he applied and whines about it. That's pretty petty, isn't it?
Yeah.
But then the way he responded is ridiculous as well. Just, you know, giving a big long list of her advertisers and saying, let's go, people. You know what to do. Both of those responses are pretty pathetic.
But companies are being, this is one thing that public outcry can do, is that it can hold businesses to account, not just in the way things happen socially, but, you know, the way that, you know, their environmental impact, their treatment of staff. Someone once said something along the lines of, you know, being good is good for business. And so they want to be seen to be being good. Is that a bad thing for our society? I mean, but that's not all.
There's rubbish, Chris. Appearing good is good for business.
But yeah, so just the public, the mob.
Don't join a mob, people. You'll end up supporting things that rational you would not support.
But do we want to hold businesses to account on their environmental impact or their treatment of staff, you know? Like, what about, this is one thing that we should be outraged about, but we don't seem to be, is Turnbull's corporate tax. So here we are, a corporate tax cut for corporations. It's going to cost however many billions of dollars for us to do this, and apparently it's going to create more wealth in the economy and it'll trickle down to everybody else. And
that's right. Good. We agree.
No, I don't agree. I had a look. It's based on an American thing where, it trickled down and their people did get bonuses. You know, like 2.5% of the workforce got bonuses from that sort of model. Yeah. 2.5%. Right. Do you think they were the bottom 2.5% that got those bonuses?
It trickled down from the CEO to his kids.
Yeah, essentially.
It's brilliant.
So I'm like, why, when we've got corporations not paying tax, a huge amount of them not paying tax, why are we not outraged about this? Australians just sort of go, eh.
So we should definitely be outraged that, like, Qantas hasn't paid tax for, I think, 5 years or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
Qantas. How have I paid more tax than Qantas?
I pay more tax than them. It's crazy.
Yeah. So we should be outraged about that. Please go to Tax Justice Network and look up. I think they've got a list of the 42 biggest tax dodgers in Australia. Look them up. Please go and tweet all of those companies and say, what the hell are you guys doing? We want decent hospitals in Australia. Start paying your tax.
So why are we
get outraged at that?
So why are we giving
but
them a
don't
corporate?
Don't link it to Turnbull's thing.
Well, how can you not? We're talking about a corporate tax cut, and they're not even paying tax. You know, like,
yep.
I'm not some sort of financial advisor, or I don't understand any of this in any sort of depth. But it doesn't make sense to me when I look at it like that. It feels like the social justice warrior is coming out of me. It feels like class warfare.
And I can understand why it would feel so wrong. I'm also not an economist, strangely, Chris, but I do read a lot of economic books because I'm a weirdo.
You are strange.
That doesn't mean I know anything about anything. But I can understand the logic that if they're not paying any tax, like under the current rules that we have, Qantas is not paying, they're paying zero tax.
Yep.
If we could get them to pay 5% tax, that would be a good step in the right direction, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So if we can get the corporate tax rates lower to the point where companies feel like, all right, we're willing to pay that much.
Why do they get a choice? It's crazy.
They shouldn't. I agree, they shouldn't.
Didn't you sort of campaign or something around? Didn't you used to do something about this?
Yeah, I've gone to Canberra a couple of times to lobby the parliament to have stricter laws around multinational tax avoidance.
Right.
Not so much from Australia's perspective, but more because of the harm it does in developing countries. Like, we often think that, you know, Australia gives Australian aid to other countries, but the reality is that multinational corporations remove more money from developing countries than foreign aid that goes into them.
Mm.
And, you know, Australia is a big beneficiary of them. We've got big resource companies, and it's primarily resource companies that do it, like your mining companies and oil companies that go in and extract resources, and they claim that they haven't made any profit from their things in that country, and they pay all their taxes in, you know, the Bahamas or whatever the country is that has a ridiculously low tax rate. So they get away with it. And yeah, so we absolutely should be outraged at companies not paying their fair amount of tax, both in developing countries, but also in Australia, because there's absolutely no reason why a $1 trillion company shouldn't be paying any tax. It's ridiculous.
I remember Rudd, you know, with his mining tax, or what was it, the super profits tax?
Yep. So I'm 100% behind that.
Yeah.
We should have been, that should have got through. And it's only because those mining companies paid a bunch of money during the election cycle that screwed the Labor Party over.
Yep.
100% with you on that one.
Yeah. But you don't think it's linked to Turnbull's corporate tax cut?
Well, so I think we have to live in the real world. Like, I agree with you that it looks bad.
Yeah.
It looks really bad. And it might be bad. I'm not saying it's not bad. But I'm just saying that reflective response of they're paying no tax, why should we lower the corporate tax rate? I don't think those things are necessarily linked. I think there is an argument, right or wrong, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but there is an argument that you could say that lowering it makes sense, because then you're going to incentivize more companies to pay the tax, because it's going to be more worth their while to just pay the tax than it is to, you know, do all the stuff they have to do to avoid the tax.
Why do they have so much power? It's crazy.
Well, because they're rich.
Yeah.
If you've got a lot of money, you can pay a really good accountant.
Mm.
If you work at Woolworths, guess what? You're probably going to HR Block or whatever it is, and that's just a dude sitting behind a table who doesn't give a shit whether you get a tax return or not. So, yeah, the more money you have, the more you can access loopholes. Should we close those loopholes? Yes.
Yep.
Absolutely. And not just for us. I care about Australia, but nowhere near as much as I care about developing countries where there literally are people starving to death.
I had this quote written down that I saw earlier, which was more going to be talking about, because we're talking a lot about journalism and everything. It was this quote from Potter Stewart, who was a high court judge in the US or something. He said, "Ethics is knowing the difference between what you have a right to do and what is right to do."
Nice.
I'm like going, why do we let these people get away with unethical actions?
Which people?
Which people? Yeah, the rich people.
All right. There he goes, that class.
Yeah.
Class warfare again, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
The problem is, if I was in their shoes, I would be doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And if you were in their shoes, you would be doing the same thing.
Mm. So, I hope
and
not.
That's why we have to get. Well, we would, because it's just human nature. Yeah. What happens is you and I start seeing them as evil people, and they're not. They're just human beings.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So that's why we need to get the laws right. Because if we've got the laws right, it doesn't matter how evil you are, because you've got to stay within the laws. And if you don't, well, then you go to jail.
They're not evil people, but they, I don't know, they seem to be different in the sense that what they care about, like I'm not saying they don't care about anything, but what they care about seems to be more focused on a smaller circle. What they care about is on a much smaller circle, because they're not going to care about the developing nation like you were talking about.
Why not?
I'm not saying, you know, they'll care about their families. They'll care about certain social justice issues as well. But
did you know Bill Gates and Warren Buffett have donated more money than anyone else in human history combined?
Yeah.
Everyone else combined in human history, those two people.
Yeah.
Do I want those two to be taxed more? No, I do not. And they're two of the richest people in the world. So the idea
is, am I allowed to generalize or not?
If there's a point to be made, sure. The rich people are bastards.
It doesn't trickle down. They try and sell this idea of trickle down. They try and sell this idea of wage growth. Just everyone that I know is on whatever award wage job they're in. You know, no one gets bonuses. I don't care about this wage growth for me, but that's what they sell to people. I just think that good capitalism is when it's a win-win situation. It's good for the business. It's good for the workers. It's good for society. It's good for the world. And then great. But yeah, there is this human nature. And I guess that is within all of us, like you were talking about before. So maybe I would be doing the same thing in their shoes, that we don't hold all of those things in our heads. What I'm trying to say is that we close the circle around us. We don't start with a global picture. We have our own smaller circle of what we care about. So I'm not saying they don't care about stuff and that they're not human and that they're evil, but I just think that what they care about gets smaller.
There are some rich people that are assholes.
Yeah.
But there's also some poor people that are assholes.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no sense that the percentage is higher in rich people than it is in poor people.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like, there's plenty of poor people that are dull bludger losers who aren't even looking for jobs, will waste their money, and who don't look after their kids. That's pretty common. Now, again, just like we were talking about with the rich people, if I had their upbringing and their biology, I would be exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
But it's also true. So I don't
think so. A lot of it's victim of circumstance.
Yeah, all of us are.
Yeah.
Even the people that are well off. Elon Musk did not choose to be intelligent. He just was. He didn't choose to be really hardworking. He just is. And if I was as intelligent as him and was as hardworking as him, I'm not either of those things. And if I had the same opportunities as him, I'd be just like him. But I'm not. It's not because he had some unfair advantages. No, it's just because he worked hard and he's intelligent. I didn't work as hard. I'm not as intelligent. Go him. I'm glad we have Elon Musk. I'm really glad we have Elon Musk. I'm really glad we have Warren Buffett and Bill Gates and Nathan Mervin Hold, or however you pronounce his name. I love all those guys. Are there bastard millionaires? Yeah, well, Trump. There you go. I don't think we should demonize them, but they definitely shouldn't be getting tax cuts. That's silly. But that will help the Liberal Party get donations come election time. So there is that.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I don't know. I love those guys too. Not Trump, not that one, but that it's all biology and circumstance stuff. I mean, there's truth in what you're saying there, but what about the will to get better? You know, progress, overcome what we can. I'm feeling a bit overcome now, though. Not much willpower, or overwhelmed, because, you know, we've been casting our eyes over recent news stories, the things that pique our interest, trying to keep across everything as we do. I've, you know, to be honest, I've been feeling a bit of despair. Well, actually, I shouldn't even laugh about it. Say despair and then laugh.
That's your way of minimizing it.
Yeah.
So that it comes across that you're not really despairing when really you are.
Yeah, I am.
What are you despairing about, Chris? Because I'll put you at ease.
Thank you, please.
Climate change? Don't worry about it. It's fixed.
It's the way human beings treat other human beings.
Yeah, I can put you at ease with that easy.
You know, you can be my counselor here, Nick.
It's just you and I, Chris. Anything we say stays between us. Won't be mentioned to anyone else.
I work at a school and we've been focusing a huge amount on trying to tackle bullying at the moment. I don't feel like we're winning, you know, and I feel sort of a bit beaten down by the world. And I think a lot of the reason why we're not winning is because the kids and their victim of circumstance, but it's just, where's the leadership in society that shows a different way? The messages that they're getting from the news cycle and that I'm getting from the news cycle is so much negativity, and then there's so much echo chamber, and there's division and class warfare, and, you know, I'm getting caught in this and I despair, and I just want people to not treat each other like shit.
I agree with all of that, Chris, other than the we're losing bit.
Yeah, and I know that there is this part of me which the more rational part of me knows that we're still making progress.
Do gays have it better today than 10 years ago?
Yeah, yeah. So that's in that sense.
Absolutely.
When we are making progress, the world is becoming a better place. But I tell you what, the news cycle gets me down, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if it gets me down and I'm able to still step outside and go, oh, you know what, maybe it's not as bad as I feel. Like, how many people aren't sort of able to make that distinction and they're just caught in the emotions that it drives, you know, the cycle of outrage and, you know, and I look at all of this and I go, oh, you know, I want to forgive the cricketers. You know, I want to take forgiveness seriously. I don't want to carry rage and negativity, because I think outrage is often, comes from, it's a negative thing. So it comes from places like fear and just comes from these unhelpful parts of our psyche. And forgiveness is often not for the other person, it's for you, you know. So I'm sort of like, I want to be able to properly let this despair go, let it, you know, like Christians say, placing it at the feet of Jesus, you know, place your troubles at the feet of Jesus, you know, sort of thing. But I don't want to forget what I care about, you know. I don't want to just numb myself. I don't want to not face it, not stand up, not fight. But yeah, all of this stuff there's a toxic element to it, and it makes me sick.
I think one of the big problems with the immediacy of news, the way that news is just there straight away, and we've got this global news system where you're hearing about things that are happening from all over the world, you're hearing heaps of stuff about things that you have no connection to, that you don't fully understand, that you're hearing a slanted view of it and you have no capacity to change it. And none of those things are helpful. 1,000 years ago, we only ever heard news about stuff that was happening in our village that we could change. So if we heard about, you know, the ruckus that was going on, you know, on the other side of the village, we could walk over to the other side of the village and get involved in it and, you know, help the people to come to a better solution or whatever. We would only hear about stuff that we could actually make a positive impact to these days. So we've still got that biology, but we don't still have the same news system. We are hearing about stuff that we cannot change, that we have no impact on whatsoever. And so we still have the same reaction inside us of going, oh, I have to change that, but we don't have anything that we can actually do. I think that's the thing that's really toxic for all of us individually that we have to wrestle with. And I agree with you. I don't think we can just pretend like these things aren't going on. I don't think that's helpful. I think we do have to stay aware of the horrors of our world so that we can do whatever little amount we can do.
Yeah.
But it's tough.
Yeah.
And it's difficult.
Because I'm like, you know, public, you know, outcry or something can carry some weight. Sharing things or twittering or signing a petition, you know, those things can carry some weight, but you feel very small on being able to have an impact, and that can get demoralizing. You know, they always talk about compassion fatigue and stuff like that, you know. So
So you know the solution to this, Chris?
I know
the solution to this.
Here we go. What's your solution?
It involves this cloudy apple cider that I've just been drinking.
I didn't want to numb myself.
No. Right, okay. Well, it starts with that.
All right.
But once you get awfully drunk, which I've actually never been drunk in my life, so I don't know what I'm talking about. But once you get really drunk and people tell you that, you know, you need to change your ways, where do they send you?
AA.
Yes. And AA have this serenity prayer.
All right.
That they say.
Yeah.
Do you know this serenity prayer?
No.
I love this. I've never been to AA, but I love this serenity prayer. So it's, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah.
I think we have to have that going through our head, that when we hear a piece of information, you know, accept the things that we can't change.
Yeah. Can you just say the whole thing again? I want that to really, I've heard it before, but I want it to create a pathway in my brain, I think.
Beautiful. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah.
Got to be courageous enough to change the things we can.
Yeah.
We have to, in the words of Tyler Durden, let all the things that we can't change slide. Let it slide.
Quoting Fight Club. Yeah.
I love Fight Club.
I know you do. It's a good place to leave it, Nick. Yeah, searching for that wisdom.
And ending on a prayer in the Eternity Ward. It's pretty good.
Yeah, can't do much better than that. All right, so... Yeah, you know how I'm going. Let me know how you're going. Chat to us by all means if you'd like to. I hope God grants you serenity. Bye.
And courage. Don't forget the courage bit.
Yeah, and courage.
Yeah.
I'm all for encouraging people, giving them courage. That's what encouragement means. Give courage.
Give courage. It's been good chatting, Chris. Wasn't quite a good news week episode.
Yes.
That title was always tongue-in-cheek, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It was tongue-in-cheek. Okay. Yeah. But we do hope you have a good week yourself.
Get out there and have the courage to change the things you can, accept the things you can't, and keep listening to our podcasts.
See you later.
Peace.
Scott here again. If at any point in this podcast you found yourself yelling vainly into the void at two idiots who can't even hear you and refuse to listen to you, then congratulations, you know exactly how I feel. Luckily for you, there are other ways to contribute. You can leave reviews on iTunes or wherever you listen to it, share it on social media, or discuss it in your blog, podcast, or fellowship group. Subscribe, like, nod your head, raise your fist, shout amen, but probably don't send a prayer because I'm kind of busy right now. Join the discussion in the comment sections, ask questions, and do come back and join us again here on the Eternity Ward.